Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
If the God of the Bible really exists, I would go gladly to hell. And anybody happy to go to heaven to worship such a creature is morally bankrupt.
It is because God's wrath is real that his mercy is relevant. Unless you have a real wrath, the biblical concepts of mercy and of grace are robbed of their meaning.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Mark Zuckerberg believes that Facebook can take the place of the church. I'm sorry, I'm trying not to crack up here. This is Wretched Radio. Don't know if you saw the interview with Mark Zuckerberg. He gave a little presentation, I believe, and was quoted as saying that Americans have lost a sense of community, of belonging, joining, being a part of something. Apparently he has a thesaurus and he likes to use a lot of descriptors for the same thing. And he believes that Facebook can fill that gap. Because apparently in America we've got a church-shaped hole in our lives that only Facebook can fill. Demonstrating that Mark Zuckerberg does not understand in the slightest what church is. I fear far too many Christians don't understand that either. I was driving along this morning in my car because, well, that's how you drive. And I was thinking again about church and how it seems to me that there are so many churches that demonstrate they just haven't thought about what they are doing on a Sunday morning. I know. This has been harangued on many times before, but that doesn't mean it shouldn't be harangued on again. I was thinking this morning about clothing. I thought, if, let's just say, you have not given much thought to the attire that you wear on Sunday morning, or you've been persuaded, hey, come on, God's our father, he's our daddy, so when we get together, it's casual, come as you are. And I think that fails to understand what we're doing on a Sunday morning. If you are, let's just say, you are a songwriter, performer. You receive a piece of mail one day from the Grammy Association that says, congratulations, you've been nominated. Be in Los Angeles or wherever they do that shebang. And you might win a little mega, what are those things called? Not a megaphone.
No, gramophone. Gramophone,
little
thank
statue.
You. A Grammy.
How would you dress? What would you think? Oh, honey, I got to go shopping. I got to get dressed up for this. Why? You would say because we're doing something special. It's the Grammys. Exactly. You're doing something special, so you get dressed up. What are we doing Sunday morning? You're not a musician, and you receive a letter from the White House. You're invited to a banquet. There'll be all kinds of dignitaries there. You'd scrounge through your closet figuring out, what's the best suit? What's the best dress I own? I gotta look great. Why? I'm doing something special. Exactly. What are we doing Sunday morning? We are doing something special. Mark Zuckerberg, I fear, is not the only one who does not have an understanding of what church is, who we is, and what we are doing. Permit me to share with you now because there are many themes in the Bible demonstrating this is not an incoherent book of mishmash, slap-together stories that need to be figured out. It's not hard. We see themes in the Bible. We see types. We see shadows. We see great, magnificent concepts woven throughout the Bible in beautiful harmony that can only be explained by remembering the Bible is supernatural. There's no way that 40 different authors throughout the course, this book was written over the course of 1,500 years, give or take. There's no way man could have been this harmonious in putting together radically different genres, and yet the Bible demonstrates it is supernatural when we take a look at some of these themes and patterns without getting allegorical and wonky. For your consideration, let us consider God's habitation, God's dwelling, where he lives. And when we take a look at that theme alone, we will have to respectfully laugh at Mark Zuckerberg's understanding of church, that it's just a place where we go to hang out with one another and feel like we're a part of something. It is far more grand than that. Now, there are other things that we could study concerning the church. There are many more angles to understand when we get together. This is something that is radically special. But we will simply look at this. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And where does God dwell? God dwells in heaven. The earth is his footstool. However, in Exodus chapter 40, we see God dwelling on earth. Where? In a little place called the tabernacle. That would be your Exodus 40, 34, and 35, Rexella. God inhabited the tabernacle. It was a special event. Nevertheless, God would come down in his presence in some form. The Shekinah glory would dwell with his people. That appearance also took place when the tabernacle was no longer necessary to be mobile when they built the temple. 1 Kings 8, 10 through 11. God's glory shows up where? In the temple. The second temple of Jerusalem. To some degree, it would appear that his glory was there. To some degree, it could be argued that the glory had departed. I would be fine with either of those, but this one is not debatable. When did God dwell on earth? In the person of Jesus Christ, John 2:19. Jesus came and tabernacled among his people. But Jesus left. Where does God dwell on earth now? Inside of the believer. 1 Corinthians 3:16 and 17, 2 Corinthians 6:16, Revelation 3:12. God makes himself known by dwelling, inhabiting his people. However, there's another way that God lives on earth, if you will. The collective church of Jesus Christ, Ephesians 2, 21 through 22, that God, if you will, is dwelling on earth, not just in the individual, but in the collective body known as the church. When you and I get together, we are doing far more than just singing some songs, hanging out, maybe having some really good food. If you're Lutheran, because let's be honest, Lutherans do the buffet. They
hard
do
to
the
argue.
Can't argue.
No,
they do
good
it.
Stuff.
They just not every Lutheran church, but as a rule, I think it's safe to say, when it comes to putting together some sort of buffet,
we potluck most churches. What you're saying?
Pretty much.
If potlucking were a competition, potlucking I've made it.
It's biblical. I don't know where, but I'm pretty certain it is. What are we doing when we get together? We are the collective body, the one in whom God dwells. Yes, it's individual, but it is also collectively. What do we do when we get together on Sunday morning? We are worshiping God. That is certain. We are learning about God. That is certain. Now, therefore, you are no longer strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God, Ephesians 2:19, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone. Remember, he's going to build his church on what? Himself. In whom the whole building, being fitted together, grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are being built together for a dwelling place of God in the Spirit. That is what the body is all about. Well, not all about, but that's a part of what we are about. Now, what about the future? God dwells with his people again. A new temple when heaven and earth meet. You can read all about it in Revelation 14, 17, 15, 5, 6, 8, 16, 1, 17, and chapter 21, 22. There's a theme in the Bible. God's dwelling, where he deigns to make himself, his presence known. And you could say that there are at least seven of those possibly eight demonstrations, the theme running throughout the Bible of God dwelling on earth. The local church is a manifestation of God dwelling on earth when God's people come together. That is what we are doing. That is what church does and represents and shows to the world, a foreshadowing of when God will dwell on earth with his people and his glory will be known and will be able to endure it because we will no longer be simul justus et peccator, but glorified saints. So with all due respect to Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook is very nice. And it doesn't hold a candle to the church. This is Wretched Radio. Why should you consider sponsoring your own Tomorrow Club? Because of stories like this.
I'd like to share a story about a young lady named Nastya. Her parents are alcoholics and don't take care of their children. Nastya and her four brothers live mostly in the street and never had enough food or clothing. One day they were invited to the Tomorrow Club. At the club, she felt something she'd never felt before, the love of God. She and her brothers became some of the best Tomorrow Club attendees. God's love touched Nastya's heart and she repented. She says that her life completely changed after she gave her life to Jesus and that he filled her with love and joy. This year, Nastya was baptized and she now helps at the Tomorrow Club, telling other children about God.
Would you please help us write more stories? Sponsor a Tomorrow Club, please. Visit tomorrowclubs.org.
Marriage. It can be incredibly wonderful or profoundly painful. Marriage is a school of character. And whatever state your marriage is in, whether it's the best ever or currently on the rocks, Drive-By Marriage will radically change your marriage. Get your copy today. Drive-By Marriage at wretchedradio.com. And remember, your purchase helps us reach more people with the amazing gospel.
If you are involved in Sunday school, or you have homeschoolers, or you're just a Christian, would you please think about getting Life is Best, our brand new, thanks to you, 13-episode pro-life TV show to teach the saints how to defend life. It is gospel-saturated and profoundly helpful in a culture of death. Please consider getting a copy of Life is Best at wretchedradio.com.
Revelation. How can anyone know God unless he reveals himself? If God did not speak, religion would be nothing more than man's best guess. But God has revealed himself in creation, in the Bible, and in the person of Jesus Christ. We can know God, and we can be brought into right standing with him. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Apparently, John McEnroe isn't the only one taking a little heat. This is Wretched Radio. Okay, what's the deal on the video posting with the Facebook social media thingamajig? I don't want to get all technical because I don't know how this stuff works with the kids and their technology.
Oh, sorry, I have to do that, don't I? Sorry. You did the cessationist video on Facebook?
Yeah, uh-huh.
It's a most entertaining and amazingly long thread.
Ah,
not
so but, people.
But it's not a lot of name calling and
that's good.
Yeah, it's for the most part, it's pretty reasonable.
That, you know what? Fine by me. We can certainly disagree if we do it Christianly, loving one another. Post away. If you disagree, you can be wrong. That doesn't bother me. just be wrong nicely. That's all.
So don't believe God speaks to us anymore.
Through the word. If you want to hear him speak audibly, read your Bible,
read your Bible out loud.
That's pretty much the deal right there. Everything we need. It's 2 Timothy 3:16-17. I grant you, it's a clobber verse. Nevertheless, it talks about the sufficiency of the word. And so does, well, actually the whole Bible talks about the sufficiency of itself.
Wow.
That the Bible is everything we need for life and godliness. No, it doesn't talk about science, geography, and the delight of steel-cut oatmeal. Because I just had some of that, and wow, is that ever good stuff? It doesn't tell me how to make it the best possible way. It doesn't speak about every issue of life, but it speaks about every issue of life and godliness, how we're to live, the decisions that we're supposed to make. I don't need anything else. And when we say that God is still speaking, we say that verse is not true. That's a wee bit of a problem. By the way, speaking of... What's the matter? You're still reading?
I was just reading. Yeah, I should put this away because it'll get me in trouble. Uh-huh. I like back to back. Okay, these three are back to back. Great, great, great message. Spot on to the point and biblically correct. Next one says Scripture is sufficient, and then I guess I don't have to agree with everything he says.
No, you don't have to.
That's pretty much the summation of the entire 107 comments and counting.
I think that sometimes.
Wow. No, I'm just going to say it for the wow.
Look, with the exception of John MacArthur, you don't have to believe anything anybody says. You got to search the Bible. Be Bereans. That's all. And we can certainly do that on some of these issues. It's an important issue, and it gets dangerously close to dealing with the Bible, sola scriptura. And the reformers, they'd probably be a lot more severe than what I was certainly in that video. The Bible is everything we need for life and godliness. Everything. Rightly interpreted, rightly applied. You got everything you need to figure out everything. Which, by the way, is kind of a subject that has also gotten me in a little bit of hot water. Although, once again, people have been very pleasant. I tweeted something that said... once you get saved, the rest of life is just window dressing. And a lot of people were like, whoa, 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 what about sanctification? What about doing the good works that God has prepared for us? That is all correct. It's just not what I had in mind. The context in my brain was perfectly clear. I can't understand why everybody else didn't know what I was thinking. All that I was referring to is once you get saved, making decisions about other things pales in comparison. Everything. We spend a lot of time fretting, worrying, laying out fleeces. What car will I buy? What house should I live in? Who should I get married? All of those issues. And they are important issues, but compared to salvation, they're drops in the bucket. That's what I was referring to. And I've tried to clarify that and make that clear. Thank you. Hold my feet to the fire. You think I'm wrong? If I say something that's sloppy, look, when I sent out that tweet, sent out the short, the rest of life is window dressing, like I said, in my brain, I got it.
Made perfect sense to you.
Doesn't mean it was perfect. So correct me. Don't worry. That's what we should be doing with one another as long as we do it lovingly. Now, the world does not do that so kindly. Don't know if you've heard about the John McEnroe kerfuffle. I find it rather amusing and rather telling. John McEnroe, he isn't just a liberal. He's a liberal's liberal.
Pretty much.
There's no question about it. He is, like, aggressively liberal. Nice guy, perhaps. I don't know the fellow. But he's definitely liberal. He's written a new book, mostly about his tennis career. And he wrote something in the book that got him in trouble with NPR, and then it got picked up by a bunch of different media outlets. And they simply trashed John McEnroe. John McEnroe should be a friend of liberals, but as soon as he said something that was deemed sexist, look out. They will tear you up and they will rip you to shreds. They have no kindness towards somebody with whom they disagree. So John McEnroe, in his book, said unequivocally that Serena Williams is the best women's tennis player in history.
Yep. Hard to argue. Although Martina Navratilova might argue.
Martina Navratilova might argue. Now, yep. Here's a statement I'll make about Martina Navratilova.
Yeah.
The doing commentary? Maybe you should be a coach. Because talking about tennis, it is really not her strength. So John McEnroe makes that statement. That she's the best women's tennis player in the whole world. So he's interviewed on NPR and the question was raised. Why do you say women's and not just the best tennis player in the whole world ever? John McEnroe responded and said that's because if she were playing against men, in other words, we actually apply our wonky worldly philosophy that says there's no gender distinctives because they're science deniers. There's no difference in gender, so there's no longer boys and girls. No longer need to make the boys' tour, the men's tour, and the women's tour. Everybody's playing against one another. He said she would be ranked about 700th if she were playing against men. Now, he didn't mean that hyperbolically. John McEnroe knows tennis. He is a good commentator. John McEnroe, a little monotone, but he's a very good commentator. He knows the sport, needless to say. And what? What do you mean 700th in the world? What? And he said, well, they're stronger. They hit it harder. Now, she could win some matches because of her mental strength or tenacity. She's been in the big arena so many times. Then she might run into a fellow who just gets a little wobbly mentally because tennis is a mental game. And she could win some of those matches, but otherwise about 700th. Whoa! Whoa! Sexist hater! And they went after him with a vengeance. The world will devour itself. So he clarified, that doesn't mean I don't think Serena is an incredible player. I do. But the reality of what would happen, something that I think perhaps to be a little higher, perhaps she'd be a little lower than 700. On any given day, she could beat some players. She's incredibly strong mentally. But if she just had to play the circuit, the men's circuit, that would be a different story. And because John McEnroe pointed out something that should be pretty obvious, there's a difference between men and women, he's hammered. The world is not nice. The world really is not. Do we not see this somewhat regularly here? Somebody says something, they're a champion. Richard Dawkins, champion of the atheists, will say one thing like, you know, I think maybe Christian history should be taught in schools. Rawr! How dare he? He's an idiot. He never knew what he was talking about anyway. We Christians can do better. We Christians should do better. I think you actually demonstrated that with my not clear tweet. And if Tony is accurate, which, while it's hard to imagine, he might be like a blind knife that finds a squirrel in the drawer twice a day. You've been nice and disagreeing. We should be. That should be our attitude. Now, that doesn't mean we can't contend earnestly with one another, but it should always have an aroma of love and kindness. By the way, in case you think that John McEnroe has suddenly, like, gotten all wise, he's still a liberal. Tennis legend proposes mass gay wedding hosted by Elton John in venue named after natural marriage defender. Natural marriage? Yeah. Apparently, there's Margaret Court. She's a pastor in Australia, and she has come out to say marriage should be between one man and one woman. Well, in Australia, the center court, the big court, is named Margaret Court Arena. Margaret Court is being shown the door. Martina Navratilova says her name shouldn't be on the venue if that's her attitude. John McEnroe said, let her name stay on it. But as soon as gay marriage becomes legal in the country of Australia, like it just did in Germany, then let's hold a mass gay wedding hosted by Elton John. We'll show them Is that a strong enough statement for John McEnroe to be welcomed back into the camp of liberalism? Not a chance. Nope. This is Wretched Radio.
Thank you for being here for Wretched Radio today. We do appreciate when you choose to spend part of your day with us. Let's talk the Wretched Club, shall we? The folks who support Wretched on a monthly basis. Head off to the home of all things Wretched, if you would, wretchedradio.com. Scroll down towards the bottom of the page where it says Wretched. Sign up today and become a Wretched Club member. Click on that. It'll give you all the details on what being a Wretched Club member gets you and what it means. It gets you full access to our radio and television archives. It gets you discounts on all our resources at the Wretched Store. And it gets you our podcast with Todd and Phil Johnson, Too Wretched for Radio. Subjects that, well, shall we say, are simply too wretched for radio. But mostly, you get that satisfied feeling that you are supporting the production of Wretched, and you are keeping us on the radio. So, if you might, wretchedradio.com and check out the Wretched Club, and thank you for your support and generosity. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel. Parents have no greater joy than to see their children walking in the truth. Unfortunately, the odds are not in your favor. 60 to 80% of evangelical kids notoriously backslide. Your child does not need to be a statistic. Get Todd Friel's latest book, Reset for Parents. This book will truly change your home. To get your copy of Todd's latest book, Reset for Parents, go to wretchedradio.com. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel. Judge Not is a book that dares to violate evangelicalism's first commandment, Thou Shalt Not Judge. Todd Friel will satirically and painfully expose some of the decay in the underbelly of the contemporary evangelical church and point to a solution to help rescue the church, save souls, and glorify God. So if you'd like ideas to put an end to the silliness that has permeated the evangelical church, get your copy of Judge Not, available now at wretchedradio.com.
Important dates in Christian history. 1870. Pope Pius IX proclaims a doctrine of papal infallibility. Though the authority of the Pope had been established for centuries, the teaching that the Pope's teaching is divinely inspired and infallible is a very recent invention. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
When will Islamic terror end? The Bible tells us when. This is Wretched Radio. What do you know? Once again, the Bible demonstrating it's supernatural. Even predicting when Islamic terror would end. This is Wretched Radio. Recently went out to the campus, University of Georgia. And we talked to the kids. They were given a microphone, which in this instance had a little feedback. And this young lady was a professing Muslim. Now, not a good one, because she's wearing a T-shirt. She doesn't have her head covered. She's out by herself. I suspect she has a driver's license. She's getting an education. So thankfully, she's not a good Muslim. Nevertheless, she approached the microphone.
I'm a Muslim.
All right.
And I'm completely against ISIS and any group that does these things. I don't know if you've ever read the Quran or if you've ever been exposed to it, but the people that act in this way are going against everything that our holy book says.
Well, they're interpreting it differently than you.
No, they're not.
So that you don't.
I mean, they are interpreting it differently, but they're interpreting it the wrong way. Because the Quran does not say, go kill all these people.
Actually, it does.
No, it doesn't.
Surah 9.
Have you read it?
Yes, ma'am. In fact, I have it in my back pocket if you'd like me to read it. Because I had a feeling this might come up today. So I brought some verses from the Quran that actually do talk about this. Now, I understand you think there's an explanation. I get that, and I'm grateful for that. But there are verses like this. Surah 9:29, fight those who believe not in Allah, nor the last day, nor hold that forbidden which hath been forbidden by Allah and his messenger, but impose jizya, which is submission, over the infidels. Surah number 5, the punishment of those who wage war against Allah and his messenger and strive to make mischief in the land, which is this is the verse of ISIS that they use because we're making mischief in the land, they believe, and so you can disgrace them and slaughter them.
So I get that you would explain these verses away. I understand that. But there are some verses that people that are Islamic have taken to do very terrible, wicked deeds. And I'm thrilled you reject that. I do too. But there are verses that are challenging for the Muslim to be able to explain them.
Indeed. And at that, she put the microphone down and walked away, Renee. The Quran is the book, the Hadith, it is the holy book also. It sits at the feet of the Quran, sort of, for some, depending on which sect, that instructs repeatedly what Muslims are supposed to do to those who will not convert to their religion. Not sure Bernie Sanders is actually aware of that. Nevertheless, when will Islamic terror end? And the answer to that question, it's got to be nuanced a wee little bit, is never. Never. Now, it might come underneath a different name, but there will always be terror in the Middle East because of the descendants of Ishmael, which is what Islam professes to be. Descended from Ishmael. Now, you may recall when you read your Bible, there is a child of the promise. There is the child of the promise is Isaac. Not according to the Muslim, they would say it's Ishmael. So we've got things confused, they believe. And Ishmael is the child of the promise. The Jews and the Christians from Isaac are not. Well, that's not what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches that Isaac is the son of promise that God gave so that there could be a what? Seed. And who is the seed ultimately? It is Jesus Christ. In Islam, they say, nope, we've got it all wrong. It's Ishmael. Well, let's take a look and see what Genesis 16 teaches about this Ishmael. God said, he shall be a wild man. His hand shall be against every man and every man's hand against him. And he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. And then Genesis 21 goes on to tell us that this fellow, Ishmael, he's going to be a lad. And because of him, for through this son of the maid, I will make a nation also, because he is Abraham's descendant. So what do we know? Ishmael is always going to have descendants. And those descendants are always going to be like a wild donkey in the wilderness with his hand against his brethren. Who are his brethren? Isaac, Christians, and Jews. Lo and behold, what have we seen since the time of Abraham? For 4,000 years, we have seen, not from Islam, because Islam is a 7th century AD invention from the prophet, small p, Muhammad. But before that, the descendants of Ishmael were always warring against the brethren, always. And so whether it manifests itself as Islam, as Arabians, they are always going to have their hand against their brethren, Christians and Jews. You say, Friel, not sure that I appreciate your rendering of Genesis 16. Let me share with you the Benson commentary. I'm not the only one who thinks this. He will be a wild man, rude and bold, fearing no man, untamed, untractable, living at large, and impatient of service and restraint. His hand will be against every man. That is his sin. And every man's hand against him. That's his punishment. But this prediction chiefly respects the seed of Ishmael, who, it is here foretold, should be a wild free man, like a wild donkey, mischievous to all around them, and extremely numerous. Such they have been for almost 4,000 years. Infamous for theft, pillage, robbery, revenge, and moida. A Mr. Brown justly observes, it hath therefore been the continued and common interest of mankind to extirpate them from the earth. But though almost every noted conqueror who hath appeared in the world, whether Persian, Grecian, Roman, Tartar, you know what? With fish sticks, oh,
tasty.
The Tartar, very, very good. Or Turkish, has pushed his conquest to their borders or even beyond them into Egypt or Arabia, not one hath ever been able to subdue these Ishmaelites or deprive them of their freedom. Here then we have another remarkable prophecy, most evidently fulfilled and a continued and standing proof before the face of the whole world of the truth of divine revelation. So when will Islamic terror end? Now, it is possible that a government could obliterate Islam. It's possible. I don't see that happening, but it could happen. But even if that were to happen, we're still going to have a wild donkey. You can try to get rid of Islam. I don't think it's going to work, but you can try to. And they will arise again in a different manifestation of a wild donkey fighting against his brothers. Because it's the descendants of Ishmael. You say, that Benson commentary's not enough for me. Here's pulpit commentary. He will be a wild man, a snarler, aptly depicting the Bedouin boundless love of freedom as he rides about in the desert, spear in hand upon his camel or his horse, hardy, frugal, reveling in the varied beauty of nature and despising town life in every form. As Ishmael and his offspring are here called wild donkey men, so Israel is designated by the prophet sheep men, exemplified in the turbulent and lawless character of the Bedouin Arabs and Saracens for upward of 30 centuries. The Arabs of today are just as they were described by the spirit of prophecy nearly 4,000 years ago. You say, I don't know who this Mr. Pulpit is. How's about John Calvin? And he will be a wild man. Simple meaning, he will be a warlike man, formidable to his enemies, that none shall injure him with impunity. Ishmael, although all his neighbors should make war upon him on every side, shall yet, though alone, be endued with sufficient power to repel all of their attacks. Why? Because he's a son of Abraham, and God promised that he'd always be a nation, not a good one. He does not, however, speak of Ishmael's person, but of his whole progeny. For what follows is not strictly suitable to one man, and he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. And they are deceived who restrict the passage to the person of Ishmael. It's talking about his descendants. So what are we seeing in the Middle East? We're seeing prophecy fulfilled. We're seeing exactly what Genesis 16 said would happen. Now, its current manifestation, again, is Islam, which means it could be wiped out. But there will just be another and another. So what is the Christian response to this? This will sound a little radical, but I'm going to suggest something that you might not anticipate. Number one, while I do believe we should petition our government to protect us and do their Romans 13 God-ordained job of protecting us from evil people so we can go about our lives in peace, it will not take care of the wild donkey problem. Number two, if you believe that the propagation of the gospel will wipe out the wild donkey problem, then we are wrong. We should preach the gospel to them because we want God to be glorified as they get saved. But if we think that we are going to wipe out the wild donkey problem, even through evangelism, which we should be doing, then we're really no different than Sarah, who took the issue of the promise into her own hands and had Abraham sleep with Hagar, and look at the mess that caused. Instead, we look to the one who promises, I am going to snuff out my enemies. I will grind them to powder under my feet. We evangelize because we're commanded to, but we trust Jesus to return and put an end to the wild donkey problem. This is Wretched Radio.
It's time for a drive-by minute.
What does self-harm say? And I want you to think through it for a minute. It depends what self-harm says. I don't know that we would say every self-harmer does it for the same reason. At its core, it's someone who's in the battle for their very soul. At its core, there is something disturbing going on. They are creating an opportunity for there to be so much pain that it distracts them from something else. Right? Most people do not get into pain just because they like pain. But if there's something else that's hurting, if there's something else that's disturbing, if there's something else that is heavy on them, then pain at some level becomes easier. Pain becomes a distraction from the greater pain.
You can get drive-by biblical counseling too and all our drive-by resources at wretchedradio.com. How do we as Christians confront our culture with a message that is offensive without being personally offensive? Prepare to go face-to-face with our lost and confused culture. Join Todd as he dares to proclaim the gospel at Georgia Tech, the University of Georgia, and the Minnesota State Fair. Speaking the truth in love is a delicate balance, so get your copy of Face to Face at WretchedRadio.com today. Remember, your purchase helps us proclaim amazing grace. Thank you.
The value of a human life, infinite. The cost to save a human life, staggeringly low. Preborn.org, an amazing ministry that provides free ultrasounds to women who find themselves pregnant and considering an abortion, see their babies, and 80% of the time they choose life. What does it cost to provide that free ultrasound? $28. $28 to save a human life. Would you please consider 5 free ultrasounds for $140 so that lives can be saved, because those lives are precious? Visit preborn.org, preborn.org.
Parents have no greater joy than to see their children walking in the truth. Unfortunately, the odds are not in your favor. 60 to 80% of evangelical kids notoriously backslide. Your child does not need to be a statistic. Get Todd Friel's latest book, Reset for Parents. This book will truly change your home. To get your copy of Todd's latest book, Reset for Parents, go to WretchedRadio.com. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Mexican. Faith is not a force we harness or a feeling we get. True biblical faith consists of 3 things: knowledge of the truth, agreement with the truth, and a trust in the true God. There is no power in faith itself. The power is in the one we put our faith in. Are you trusting in Christ or in something that cannot deliver? This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
How much did early Christians disagree over theology? This is Wretched Radio. It would appear there's yet another assault on Christianity led by none other than Bart Ehrman. You know, Bart, he was a graduate from, was it Moody or Wheaton? Evangelical school.
Isn't that kind of what Bart does? Well, it's
he makes a living
Tuesday, Thursday, Friday,
God.
Monday, Wednesday. I should.
This has become a shtick. He hates the Lord so much. He's like Dan Barker. Now, he's a little bit more educated than Dan Barker. Nevertheless, he's still just warring against God. And I think it's probably for the same reason that Dan Barker from the Freedom From Religion Foundation is warring against God. Dan Barker, if you recall, he was a part of the Catherine Kuhlman movement. She was the individual who taught Benny Hinn how to put on a show. And he traveled around in his busted-up Volkswagen, getting broken down on the side of the road, and not sleeping in the back seat. And let me tell you something. Sleeping in the back seat of an old Volkswagen.
Uh-uh.
That isn't fun.
My back
and
is
so
sore thinking
he
about
got
it.
Tired of it. And he realized it was a charade, and he gave up on Christianity. Now we know he was never among us if he left us. But because of his Christian experience, where he tried to be a good boy, realizing this is a joke, so he thought, because, well, he was with a joke, but that's a different story. He spent the rest of his life now warring against God. I know that because I've debated him. I've talked to him many times on the radio, and I recently saw a debate that was sent into Idea at WretchedRadio.com. It was sent in, it was held at a Lutheran church, I believe in Texas, and he was debating.
There are Lutheran churches about, in Texas?
I know, not many.
Wow.
Does God exist? Now remember, that's the premise. Does God exist? So Dan Barker's attack on does God exist, it wasn't anything that even came close to hitting the bullseye. In fact, it wasn't even aimed at the target. It was aimed at venting. His basic assault against the fellow the Christian, who seemed to do a pretty fine job based on what I saw. Well, what about this God in the Old Testament? He's barbaric. Look at this genocide. Are you for genocide? Okay, does that address the issue, does God exist? No. What is it? It's a bit of a debate tactic. Your God is so bad he can't exist. Now, it's illogical. It is a
terrible, terrible form of logic and reason. Nevertheless, his little syllogism doesn't even make sense. What is he doing? He's angry at that God, and he's taking it out on that God, and he's trying to shut down any expression of Christianity in the country if he possibly can. And he's winning a lot of these battles, by the way. What was that debate strategy about? Was it proving that God doesn't exist? No. It was trying to expose that this God of the Bible is horrible. Therefore, he doesn't exist. Illogical. He's angry. Bart Ehrman, well, seemingly less hostile, is just as angry. He's warring against God. He is warring against God. And Bart Ehrman's latest attempt to discredit the God of the Bible is to try to reveal, I think he's got a new book out, look at the early church. Look at all of the disagreement. And so you guys, you call yourself Orthodox because you won, but there was no orthodoxy for the first 3 centuries. That's his argument, and it's relatively new. It's been used before, but it's to demonstrate Christianity cannot be true. You guys have your version of it simply because you were more successful. But that's not what the early church believed. And so Michael Kruger decided to take a run at it. He writes, Bart offers a laundry list of many of the conflicting beliefs held by early Christians, a list that no doubt would and is designed to shock and overwhelm the average leader. So the question is Bart right? Was early Christianity really as diverse as he claims? No credible standard in the second century that distinguished between true and false? Is that true? And the answer to that question is, no, it's not true. Sure, these people in the early centuries that we would now consider heretics claimed the name of Jesus. No doubt about it. But that doesn't mean that they were Christians. That to call them Christian is accurately describing their theology. And so it's a semantic sleight of hand that Bart is pulling. It's under the, these people thought they were Christians, and who am I to say otherwise? But it's substantially misleading. Now, here's an example that is offered. This I think, helps bring some clarity so that we can just knock this argument down. This is, again, from Michael Kruger. To use a modern example, consider the UFO religious group Heaven's Gate, led by Marshall Applewhite. Tony, you used to be in that movement, didn't you?
For years.
Confusing that with something. This group believed that they would be transported upon death to an alien ship following the Hale-Bopp comet, a belief that led 39 of them to commit mass suicide in 1997. They also claimed to follow Jesus and to be fulfilling the prophecies of Revelation. Now imagine a newspaper reporter who was supposed to write on these events went on the evening news and declared, Christians believe in UFOs and also believe they should commit suicide to join an alien spacecraft trailing the Hale-Bopp comet. You'd be a little annoyed, wouldn't you? When challenged, the reporter would say, well, the group claims to be Christian. But we all know they're not Christian. They're aberrant. And the same thing is true in the early centuries. Yeah, there was some wackiness. Of course there was. There still is wackiness in Christendom. They're not true Christians, but a lot of people claim the name of Jesus for all kinds of nefarious reasons. Or some of the tenets that they claim. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the religion that began in a hat, claims to be followers of Jesus Christ, but that doesn't mean they are. So then the question really becomes, not were there a bunch of different Christian sects, there were, but which one is right? Is Bart correct in stating, well, it's just because you won doesn't mean you're right? That's agreed. So how do we determine this? Who is right? What's the source of determining who's representing the words and teachings of Jesus correctly? And the answer to that is the Bible. That's all. And so we go to the Word of God and we say that string that we see in the first, second, and third centuries that has led to us today in 21st century orthodoxy, small o orthodoxy, is based on what the Bible teaches. That's all. So Bart, nice try, But we have to go back to the Word to determine what is right and what is wrong, what is true and what is false about Christianity. Speaking of the truth and departing therefrom, is that a word, therefrom?
We just go with departing from it.
Oh. But that didn't seem as King Jamesian. Christians,
yeah,
who
but
affirm
it didn't seem as clumsy either.
The normative, but it did it sound smarterer? That's what is
it
important
did.
To me.
It sounded great. Much smarterer.
Division begins with the departure from the truth. Christians who affirm the normative, this is a Gospel Coalition article, Christians who affirm the normative, traditional, historical, orthodox view of the Bible's teaching on various sins are always being accused of being divisive. You feel that these days? Oh, you're just being divisive. Love this analogy. That would be like the adulterer calling after his wife as she's walking out the door that she's being divisive. That's what they're doing. Hey, you people who have held on to these views for 2,000 years, you're being divisive by not agreeing with us upstarts. No, you're the ones who are dividing. Don't let them play that sleight of hand with you. Oftentimes we hear this little assault. You people are just not nice. You people are dividers. Mm-mm. From the article, the person who objects is often told they are singling out this particular sin as over-important, as more important than unity. But it is not those who protest who are singling out particular sins. It is those bringing the revision, the ones who are asking, did God really say, which is precisely what is going on these days. It isn't those who believe the Bible when it says sin is sin who are being divisive. It is those who are introducing the idea that some sins aren't, that have been clearly understood to be sins for centuries now. Don't let them push you into a corner. Don't let them make unity supreme over sinning or being divisive. Truth divides. The question, of course, is who's dividing from whom? Well, the question is, what is the standard? What is the norm? And once again, where do we go? We go back to the Bible. And so they're claiming that we've been basically reading it wrong for the last 2,000 years. When Paul said that's a sin, he didn't really mean that's a sin. When Jesus said he's the only way, he didn't mean that he's the only way. So stop being divisive. No. As they like to say in Germany, au contraire. They do say that a lot. Well, they have such a thing for the French culture that the German, but it would be more like au contraire. It's how the Germans would stereotypically say it. They are the ones who are being divisive, not small O Orthodox Christians. Until next time, go serve your king.